Welcome to That's What I Call Marketing, the podcast where you will hear from the leading lights in the marketing world and listen to their unique insights. Don't forget to rate or review this episode wherever you are listening or watching. It really helps us reach and build on this amazing community of engaged marketers just like you. Well, today I am joined by newly appointed Chief Operating Officer of Dentsu, Ian McGrath. Ian is a verified top voice on LinkedIn, and rightly so, as it is there that you will find Ian sharing his thoughts on media and marketing. And he has lots of thoughts to share, as you'll find out today. Coming from his years of experience working and running top media agencies in Ireland, as well as running global media for the brand PokerStars for the past 2 years. During today's conversation, we talk about Ian's love of spreadsheets, the role agencies have played in his career, and how the move client-side happened, and the experience of being client-side, how that differed to his agency roles. We talk about accountability and autonomy, the importance of understanding culture, geography, global and local nuances, how understanding things like marketing and business metrics matter, the role of testing, understanding loyalty and penetration, and understanding all the different areas of marketing, and how ultimately how you use all of this information depends on so many factors. Enjoy this episode, not only with a truly smart and pretty humble person, but a very sound guy, Ian McGrath.
Today's show is supported by the Indie List, the leader in providing you with easy access to hundreds of highly experienced marketers quickly and cost effectively. Visit theindielist.ie to speak to the Indie List team today.
If you would like to reach an engaged community of marketing leaders, get in touch with That's What I Call Marketing to discuss sponsorship opportunities.
Ian, thanks a million for joining me on That's What I Call Marketing. Great to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me. Apologies.
I'm trying to get you on for a while.
Apologizing in advance for people who kind of might listen to this.
Not at all. Listen, you've had a fascinating career, and I'm not going to go take you, back in time. This is your life. Eamon Andrews walking through the door. But you spent a huge amount of time media agency, kind of that side. You were Cara.
Yep.
And media, Cara, like that goes back. Mediacom as well. Obviously not going back too far there.
All the brands are kind of gone from the Irish market anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, they are a bit. They're being renamed into something else. We love a bit of renaming. No consistency, is there an ad lounge?
No.
We tell our brands to be consistent, and then we go and we merge and change.
We keep our brand and our holding companies very quietly named, yeah. There might be a reason why, the biggest advertising companies in the world are listed as tech. Like, if you look at the revenues of Google or Facebook, like they're ad companies in a way, but they're listed as tech companies and, the share of the stock exchange that they hold versus agency groups kind of a bit phenomenal, when some of their biggest customers are actually, only a 1.5% share of the stock exchange and they hold over 40, doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't make sense, but I suppose they are media. But listen, what appealed to you about going into the world of media and kind of, having your head in planning spreadsheets, I guess. Yeah, they still exist, which baffles me, by the way.
I love a good spreadsheet. I finished when I was relatively young. I finished college when I was relatively young. I was 20 the day I finished college. And I'm with a degree now. I didn't drop out or anything. And I went, you couldn't get a job in agencies at that stage. It changed very quickly. But I started off in the dispatch. And I worked in production and then I worked in... I was a runner for the creative and the production teams and then I did some client service stuff, all within a year, But I thought agencies as a starting point, when I was 20 years old, fresh face, loads of ideas, I thought it was a great place to, understand what area of marketing I wanted to go into, And it's, obviously it wasn't as broad back then, did I want to be in creative? Did I want to work more kind of maybe, client side, which you'd kind of get a flavor from client management. I didn't want to stay in dispatch forever. Guys are smoking in the office all the time. I was inhaling it. I certainly didn't want to stay there. And I did a bit of travel and I never got to work with the media side of things. But I had an itch for that. even though it was the one I wasn't exposed to. Now, it was all in-house. It was in DDB, Peter Owens at the time. So, you know, all the departments are kind of essentially working together. Maybe that changed, you know, in the time. But like, you know, used to be kind of full service, you know, was the preferred model when I started. That's kind of just over 20 years ago. It's not like ancient times. And that, like, that told me, look, media is where a lot of the customer data is. It's where a lot of the, you know, the marketing data was at that time. Like, so if you wanted to understand like the effect of your marketing, you only really had like JNLR, TV ratings and stuff like that. So that kind of pushed me towards media. And I would say, look, it's a great place to start. And looking back, like when I think of like why it was a great place to start, like it's a really good place to kind of get the basic principles of marketing. You know, like you're effectively in media, you're optimizing for reach and frequency. You know, you're looking at the profiles of customers, how to connect with them through, you know, proper environments. Like you're getting that all from the beginning of your career. And then what you're doing is actually also learning the detail of marketing, because like it's very, very important to get the detail right. Beyond that, then agencies are very competitive. They're innovative as environments. You know, they're always the ones who ask the question, what's coming next? And how do we tackle that? So like that's important. And then the other piece as well is like within an agency, you get to work with like obviously a broad sector of different businesses and how they might approach marketing. And what that does is it opens up like a breadth of experience, but also like genuine talent who you might work with, you know, both within the agency, within media owners, within, you know, clients themselves. And it just, you know, the overall kind of marketing industry in general as well, like agencies are selling to, so they're always plugged into. So it opens that as an opportunity to learn your trade from. So I'd say like, it's a really, really good place to begin. And that, like the biggest value that I took from working agency side, I think it's kind of maybe lost its way a little bit within marketing, but agencies, or maybe it was like good agencies were, they always kind of valued integration and, you know, understand a multidisciplinary kind of background and, you know, in terms of your skills. So like, you know, if you go in an agency, you'll learn, you know, trading, then you learn like, you know, account service and client management, some passive business management, you know, within that, and commercial. You'll also learn, you know, which in trading, obviously channel management specialization, then you'll learn planning and strategy. And you know, so you're layering that in all the time. Agency is a great place to develop a multi-disciplined kind of skill set for your marketing. And if you look at what's kind of happened, like you know, a lot of marketing is either over specialized by sector or it's over specialized by channel.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, you know, it's kind of robbed marketing a little bit of some productivity and creativity. We've seen it kind of evidence kind of spread. Obviously breaking through that now, which is great. Like marketing's kind of, I think, coming into a, you know, a new age anyway. But definitely there was a flattening of all that experience, you know, and a talent gap emerging around people who had basically more than one specialism. And that came from an agency background, you know, and then also the value of integration and being able to work across departments, across channels, and even able to see stuff from the customer point of view, because like they don't see how you plan. We're going to put a little bit of money on TV. I'm going to put a little bit of money in sponsorship. I'm going to, you know, develop my own media. They don't see that. Like they get the, they get the experience, you know, like, so that kind of integration ecosystem type planning came from, you know, agencies. So like that, those two things, for those two reasons alone, like high value reasons, I'd say agencies are a very good place to start. And then everything else they listed are kind of like, you know, secondary benefits that are still very good kind of benefits, you know.
Yeah, and it is interesting because I think you're right, and even that I think the nature of agencies is sometimes maybe it's the size, but also like, you know, what's going on, it's busy, you know, and you have to kind of figure out a lot of different things. You can't just be, well, no, this is the one thing I do. I think it's gone a bit to that, if I'm honest. Yeah. I think there's still, you know, a specialization. I see that where, you know, it's like, well, this team does this thing and this team does that thing. Like, really? But like, to your point, the consumer experience it all just as a thing from your brand. But like, you know, there's a lot, I do see it with a lot of people who are like, well, that's that team and that's that team. And, you know, yeah. it's in a review meeting where the teams are talking for the first time. You're like, really?
Yeah, that's bad. It's like, and you know, there's kind of, what is it? The Mark Ritson, you know, did his Effie's kind of review 50 years or so. And like, he put a very simple, you know, graphic afterwards. Because like, the, you know, how marketing works is it works in terms of the multiplier, you know. So either you get your business analysis right, then you get your strategy right, and then you get your execution right. And there's a multiplier between two. And definitely there's a loss of that multiplier between strategy and execution within marketing. And it's caused by over specialization because people can't see beyond what Google and Facebook are telling them. Maybe that's very unfair, but like, you know, I suppose they're paid and they've been trained and paid to operate within a channel, and then told to think broadly, but it's not part of what they're, you know, rewarded for to. Yeah, or kind of what they do 90% of the time for. So I think there's a little bit of a, but there's always going to be the need for balance between specialism and multidisciplined backgrounds, you know, and depends on when you need them. You know, if you want to go fast, specialists will help you get there fast initially, but then like, you know, things will change. So you know, that's important, but I do think that we've over specialized, you know, and that's the issue, you know.
Yeah, there's a balancing of it to come, I think. Yeah. And, you know, and again, look, I think it's probably on people as well to that if you're in a very specialized and niche area, like that, it's probably on you to kind of go, actually, that's great because I am a specialist in this, but like that could be narrowing for me. And that's, you know, it's a decision that people can make and kind of go, right, how can I expose myself to other parts? Because I think I talk about it a lot in this podcast, like curiosity. I think that curiosity of kind of going, actually, I want to learn how this part works. Like I find it surprising if there's a business or an agency or anyone who kind of goes, actually, no, back over you go. Yeah. To your box over
or
here.
Even to understand your own part in the world, you know.
Yeah.
That's really important. And that's like, look, I left agencies after, so I worked a long time with Kara Densu, and then I moved to Mediacom to head up a kind of a transformation brief around the agency. And once that was completed, like, you know, very hard work, successful. But then it was like, you're right, the curiosity was kind of what made me want to leave, because you know, I just saw there was areas of marketing that I wanted to understand how businesses made decisions on, you know, not necessarily marketing, but business. So like, you know, how businesses made decisions on, you know, positioning and their pricing and even their marketing investment, because it mightn't always come from the marketing team. And I wanted to kind of catch that and build that as my own kind of experience. So to do that, I had to leave agencies, you know, because you weren't as exposed to that part of marketing. And there was also just a general kind of opportunity out there, I believed at the time anyway, around measurement, but also how businesses' understanding of marketing and, you know, how marketing operations are done and how they were resourced, you know. So I kind of said to myself, look, sit back, maybe take it a bit more easy, you know, because the growth was achieved and the turnaround was done. Or you can go and say, look, I still want to learn. Marketing is brilliant. Like, I love it. And there's still so much more that I could, you know, learn about it to both improve myself, but then help people, you know, in their roles. And definitely there's an appetite from businesses, I think, at the, you know, the end of the last decade to basically move marketing upstream. I think it was coming from like the businesses themselves rather than kind of marketers trying to push it, you know. They wanted to see better returns from, you know, they got away as the economy started to grow quite fast in the middle of the last decade. They kind of got away with putting money into channels and watching, you know, kind of leads come in and expect leads would actually result in business. And as that kind of like, if that was the currency within a business, as that matured over time, they kind of said, well, these leads aren't actually resulting in, you know, better business. Anything. So what we want to do is, you know, good CEOs are optimistic. They didn't invest in any, you know, something for nothing. You know, they want to say, okay, how can we improve things? And there was that opportunity for marketing to move upstream. And I just said, look, that's a great opportunity for me as a consultant to be part of it. And as I moved in consultancy space, COVID happened. All that opportunity doubled. And I got to work with like mainly like the brands that were capitalizing on that, which was like, you know, retail, gaming, publishing at the time. I know it's kind of still, it's a tough business. Publishing and a lot of B2B, you know. And what they, you know, looking in, some of what they were doing, it's just like there was a lack of understanding of what marketing should do or could do. And then they were also like badly maybe structured by channel or chasing the wrong objectives, you know, like, so they were set up for what they could do rather than what you wanted to get out of them. The objective, what you can do. And that's like probably the, it's not even, no probably about it. It was the wrong way around. And look, that kind of working in that area, working as a consultant, both in Ireland and international markets, allowed me to, I suppose, broaden my own experience and my CV. That's what took me to Flutter and PokerStars. I worked there, obviously, kind of in a great kind of, you know, global role. And it was a kind of changed client side, but it wasn't me consciously making the decision to move from agency to client side or agency to consultancy. It was just the opportunity itself, you know, that, and where I wanted to learn more about the industry and where I believed kind of I could have, greater impact as I built that knowledge base. I didn't make any deliberate move to go from agency side to client side. It was always about the opportunity and what kind of that crusade was. My CMO I work with always talked about, like, you know, when I was interviewing for the role, he's like, join me on this crusade. We always kind of talk about, like, you know, what we needed to achieve. And so it felt like that. It was good. There was good energy about it. And then, I'd always say it's not necessarily, you know, client side, it's not necessarily agency side. It's the opportunity and what allows you kind of, what you can get your fingers sticky in, you know, that is actually important in terms of choosing the right, you know, the right job for you.
Yeah, because when you look at it, you know, it can, like, look at your CV, I guess, it can look like, you know, almost a very deliberate decision to do that. And it's kind of interesting to hear you say that wasn't necessary. Because again, I've been agency side and client side. Again, it wasn't deliberate. But I'm so glad I did that because to your point that there's things you don't know that's going on the client side of a business when you're on an agency side and you're wondering, you're kind of going, what?
Yeah.
I remember briefs coming in that disappear for like 4 weeks. Be like, what?
Yeah.
What happened to that big brief that was a real emergency?
Like, Peter McPartlin was in both Cara and Mediacom with me. And, you know, he'd remind the people kind of in the team, you know, that they don't wake up and just think about you. Like, you're not the first thought on their head, the client, you know, like they've got other stuff that they do. You know, oh yeah, so you know you don't want to get lost in little echo chambers, yourself. Yeah. And look, you're always busy, so you can.
I know.
You know, sometimes get funny kind of thing. Those things. Yeah, but look, like you, I suppose, I wanted the mixed view of the world because then that helped me have a better, you know, view of it. I suppose overall, you know, you've opened yourself up to it.
What when you went then into the role, I guess a PokerStars, because again, it is a different type of thing, you know, look, the consultancy probably prepared you for it a bit, but kind of going real in agency side of things. Like what were the things that maybe struck you or surprised you about that? You know, maybe Peter McPartlin in your head going, okay, I don't wake up thinking about them.
It was actually very focused brief, that we got. And it was one of the reasons I liked it a lot. I don't want to kind of said to you, I can't do any trade secrets or anything like that. But essentially it was a change brief, you know, what we needed to do as a team overall, in order to, you know, how we organize ourselves and would tackle marketing in the future. What we kind of sat down and we decided on was, let's not start from where we are. Let's start with what we want. And we do that, you know, work backwards, and what kind of team we wanted to be, what kind of marketing then we wanted to deliver as that team. These are things that I value a lot as well. So like, you know, you knew you were working with, the right people, you know, like they felt the same way and, very powerful about certain things that teams should do now, like kind of maybe no particular order, because, you know, I'd value all of them. But I would say, like, you know, what we wanted was a team of critical thinkers. You know, people make decisions themselves, and, you know, they would come up with the plans that would align to the goals that we decided. You know, but now obviously there's tweaks and stuff and areas that we could help them. Our job as leaders, open up the resources, or give better guidance, those type of things.
Yeah.
So I would say definitely it's about, you know, that critical thinkers as being one of the things you want. You want a balance between autonomy and accountability. And I know everyone loves the first one. They hate the second one. But, you know, you don't the one thing that gives you is kind of, you know, those smart objectives for people. So they have, like, you know, people, you say people want, like, they want comfort and security in their role. Well, the best way you can do that is actually give them really clear objectives. You know, here's where you contribute to the business. Here's where you add. Here's where you can go the extra mile.
Yeah.
All those things. And, like, people, you know, it seems a little bit black and white or tangible. You know, once you explain to them, look, we're gonna be as smart as we can with these targets. But it's about the trend. You know, like, if you're missing it in 12 months and we hit it in 14 months, isn't it better than us doing a big price cut and kind of trying to win loads of customers for a year end target, you know, and killing off lifetime value? Like, so, you know, once you're a critical thinker and you're working that way, you'll understand that, like, you know, your CMO or I'm, you know, me in my role, we weren't going to come to you and say, ah, hang on, like, you know, what are you doing here?
Month on month.
Yeah. Like, so kind of month on month is important because you get to see the build and that you're going in the right direction. And then the last bit I would say is kind of continuous learning. So you're always testing yourself, like you're testing the strategy, what you're doing, and is it actually having the impact that you want? So I'd say, like, you know, start with those things and work backwards. And then the things that you need to do that are obviously, like, people who can work well cross-functionally, because you never deliver an objective on your own. You very rarely do anyway. And that's both cross-functionally within, you know, the various different parts of marketing, but also, you know, other parts of the business. You know, the strategy can work well with commercial, that, you know, people who are kind of bringing in leads are working in terms of, you know, with pricing, conversions. We get great lessons in terms of the research that we did in our consumers, because it was allowed us to be flipped from being a product or vertical focused marketing team to being a customer focused marketing team. And what we learned was, you know, this priority kind of, I suppose, products for each different type of market. There was more opportunity, headroom for upselling, but also we'd like way too many messages. And actually there's three kind of key messages that people wanted to hear, you know, like, so you were able to not spam people anymore and talk them only about what they wanted to hear from you as a brand. So people who can work cross-functionally and understand all that and basically understand the cleanup that you'd need. I think people organize around clear vision and goals. Those atomic habits, you know, actually kind of bled into some of the thinking. And then I'm a big fan of lean structures. You know, I think they facilitate the likes of continuous learning and integration. So trying to do a little bit more with less. I don't mean, like, as in stretch people too.
Stretch everybody.
Oh yeah, like count the pennies, you know, like that type. No, it's not about that. It's about clear decisions. Like, you know, one or two people will make quicker and better decisions than 20 people, you know?
Oh yeah.
You know, so you've got the right team, you've got the right mix, you ask them to behave the right way, you want to give them the autonomy and the accountability, right? So the biggest way you can get in their way is to kind of just labor on loads of process and loads of, like, you know, different decision makers, and then they go, well, how am I ever meant to do that, you know? Like, so I think those are the things you need, but the things that you want are definitely continuous learning, critical thinkers, and a balance between autonomy and accountability.
Today's show is brought to you by the Indie List CMO Collective. This service from the Indie List provides you with access to a curated range of highly experienced and talented senior marketing specialists. Visit theindielist.ie to find out more.
How do you hire for that, right? Because then, like, that's a I think there's two things I'm thinking of there. You know, to find that in people is probably hard, but then also that you're not hiring all the same people. And then it becomes just, you know, a group of people who have the same views and perspectives.
Yeah, that's two very good points. We did have a very good base of people already in the team. Now, I think that, you know, there's a lot of good people out there, and they're asked to do things ambiguously, or they're asked to do some of the wrong things, you know, like, so we just spoke about people who were, you know, working in smaller kind of marketing teams who, you know, businesses didn't understand, who were basically optimizing for whatever's in their channel and not objectives. Now, so there's loads of good people, and it's actually, you know, you can try and find more people like that, but it's actually in lots of people, you know, so if you create the right environment, you'll answer to those two points, you know, so, and the people you'll attract and the people you stay, I think they prefer that environment. But just generally, I think people prefer, you know, I know what I'm doing. I know who I have to work with and how I have to work with them. And I know what these guys want. So, you know, once that, it's a bit of fun along the way, you know, more than just a free pizzas on a Friday, you know. It seeps in, like, the lessons in, you know, Flutter and Poker Stars were kind of lessons learned from changes in Mediacom, you know, culture. And culture is really important. And success.
Proper culture, as you say, it's not like the tennis table culture. Yeah. You know,
I like people organize a lot of culture themselves, you know, so it's not just the management, you know, like, so.
Yeah.
People don't like sitting on their own, you know, particularly people in marketing, because it's kind of people business. So that they're nature, it evolves a little bit by osmosis, you know. But then there's also like, you know, we all are together for work, and you have to balance both success and momentum as well. A lot of balancing acts in marketing management.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you don't want to do is like run away with success and have everybody burned out, as you were saying, like stretch everybody, you know, like, so you have to have that manage over time. And then, like, once you're kind of doing that for everybody else in terms of leadership team, you're letting them kind of, you know, contribute or help orchestrate what the culture is. And you get that feeling as well, you know. And it does take time, you know. It does definitely take time and some patience.
It's about clarity, isn't it? Like, clarity, like, we, you know, you talked about it there, simplifying and clear messages to consumers, but actually in a marketing department, it's about clarity of, like, you said it there, like, what's our contribution to the business? And knowing that the thing that you're doing is, that's the contribution, that's where it matters. The ambition that collectively the team has to drive that contribution to the business. Like, all those things, they sound very straightforward, like they're not. But once you get people galvanized around that, and not in a kind of a WeWork, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've seen the WeWork document, like, it's not that, but it's more, you know, genuine, I guess. Although they probably did a great job galvanizing people, if that's really what happened.
Promised tech stock, which was, he's back at it again. He's trying to buy it back.
I did see that.
Incredible. Gall on that guy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, having the ability to do that, like, that takes time. I think, you know, even as a leader, you have to go in and figure out what that is and, you know, what other people in the business need from you. Was that hard when you got to PokerStars? You said it was a very clear brief, but was there more to be done when you got in to kind of figure that out, or was it kind of
straightforward? Yeah, the stuff I won't go into, you know, like, in terms.
Yeah, yeah.
But
NDAs.
Like, it's a really professional and a fun business you're working for already, you know, so. Starting there, you're inheriting a lot of that, you know, like, so the people who have managed Flutter and PokerStars over the last number of years, they've done a great job, like, you know, so you like to sit here and think that, you know, we take all the credit for, you know, the changes that took place, like, no way, like, they did it, you know, like, you're inheriting a lot of this, you know, but look, you know, it's a, I was reading about, you know, growing your way from Diageo, like you said it, better than anybody, I think. It's just like, you know, about doing the basics, you know, right, really well all the time. Yeah. You know, like just keep doing the basics right, and some patience, and you know, you that's how you deliver. You know, like, so in terms of like, you know, what we got right in you know, being an iGaming brand, but also like just kind of generally within marketing, is kind of make sure you do those basics right. Like, you know, what do I start with? The situation analysis, you know, your market analysis.
Yeah.
Get involved in commercial planning. If you're working internationally, like, know where, you know, some big payback wins come from. So just geography, for one, could be very easy. You know, like, what's it, Paul Tyson's work? Geography is the second biggest multiplier of, you know, profitable marketing. Segment by your market type, so you can, you know, then you know that you're not actually having to approach all, you know, markets individually. Like, you are actually, generally, if you're working internationally, you're a global brand. So you execute as much as you can globally, and then you adapt what you have to, you know, locally. That kind of also kind of, I suppose, bleeds into your positioning, your strategy, your execution. And then, like I said, continuous learning means kind of you have measurement and testing kind of throughout. Like, so it's not just left to the end. Like, you're testing yourself as you move through a strategy. So, you know, that's really, really important. I think the other area of success is not just within game, like marketing again. We kind of get caught in the past, you know, so it's always relevant to, you know, broaden the data set. I don't mean like take it, you know, periodically, I suppose, more so than always, but like broaden the data set in terms of that testing. Because what you'll do is you kind of build maybe an understanding of, you know, how the business did in the past, so you can explain the past, but not necessarily forecast that well for the future.
Yeah.
Because all the same conditions would have to be, you know, in play, and they're not.
They never are.
They never are, you know. So if you broaden out the data set and you kind of understand, like, the macro environment is having much more of an immediate impact on businesses this decade than it did maybe the last decade. We're all feeling it now because of, you know, interest rates and inflation as consumers. So, like, you know, they're also having an impact on business. So you'd need to understand like how those are affecting both the industry and your business specifically too. So like that's an important piece, and, you know, move away from the tendency to kind of, you know, businesses kind of rely maybe on linear models because they've been built from the past and simplified to a point which made good sense because it drove, you know, efficiency. Things have to be allowed to become a currency, you know, or, you know, strategy has to be allowed some time to prove itself or not, you know, like, so get it, but there comes a time when you have to kind of like, you know, draw a line and say, look, we need to move past what we kind of take as a default.
Because the gospel,
like,
kind of,
it's binary, you know, in a world that changes. Yeah. And then what you do is with that, I suppose, the people who didn't do that were the people who, you know, relied heavily on performance marketing. In the last decade, particularly, and they realized that, you know, growth flattened out, and what we did to get us here isn't what we do to necessarily continue to grow. You know, so whether it's, you know, in iGaming or it's just generally within business, I'd say the kind of the three areas to focus on now would be, you know, your kind of your branding. I think content is still like I don't know, you could say. Should sit on the branding, so like, you know, your content marketing, and also how you look after your customers, because what that does is it optimizes both your efforts and your investment, both in the short term and the long term. You know, and if you over focus on just say the likes of leads or performance marketing, you're missing kind of the future
demand.
It's as true maybe within, you know. It kind of sits across a lot of, you know, businesses. And how you actually employ it is different. You know, you have to do your own work.
Because you've talked, you're kind of touching it here, but you've talked about and, right? You know, there's lots of ands in marketing. I think there's as many ands as there are depends. I think the two of them sit nicely together. But like that point, you know, performance marketing will do the current, and then, you know, how you do the capture the future demand or be present for that. it is a huge challenge. I think a lot of brands or marketers still struggle with within businesses. And maybe it's within more of the newer startup scale-up businesses where money is tighter.
Yeah.
It's harder to justify that case. Like you know, outside looking in, you look at the Poker Stars going, it's Poker Stars. Like, you know, they've gazillions of dollars of money to throw it. So they can do everything. They can do it all and they can do it brilliantly. And, you know, therefore they're...
Well, everyone can waste money. You know, that's the, you know...
And wasting money is the easy thing.
Yeah, wasting money is the easy thing. You know, like, so everyone can waste money. But you never want to do that because, like, you know, as much as you want to be, you know, have your marketing aligned for future success, you don't want to, like, you don't waste all your money either where you're not there when the future sales would come to you, you know?
But so, how do what would your advice be for somebody who's kind of hitting their head against a brick wall in a business today, listening to this going, I'm trying to move past just the leads conversation and into the future demand and kind of making sure that we're present?
It's actually as much a business question as it is a marketing question. But I will kind of, I'll do a Billy Connolly, you know, he kind of interjects his own little stories. And this one is actually fairly relevant. I know he goes off on tangents and he's much funnier. Like, actually, he's funny. I'm funny. He's much funnier than me. I'm just not funny. But like, I won't say when this was, but I was working with a marketer and they kept, you know, going on about the Binet and Field, long and short of it. And they said, look, over time, like, you know, the thing we need to do is actually, we need to invest in our branding because that's what drives profitability. And it's like, he kept showing this graph to everyone going on. And it's like, I was like, you know, there's a page too. We've only launched, we're a new brand. We're relatively small in the market. And it shows then what your mix should be, you know, and what your kind of entry point to the, you know, the category should be over time. And that's quite different, you know, like, so if what they did was like, they obviously, you know, what, a 60 page document or something like that. Like I said, you know, there's a lot more to the publication than what's on page one. And I do think that, you know, people maybe, take these prescribed views. They're definitely like, you know, generally right. What they don't do is then maybe go to page two. And the other thing they don't do is maybe they don't do their own work, you know, like, so, that's the critical important bit. Because it's highly dependent on factors that maybe even sit outside of marketing. You know? So the business cycle itself, working capital available, cash flow, what's prioritized within the business in relation to that, what is actually going on in the macro environment, the leading indicators within the economies, maybe if products that you have to sell, you know, because the cost...
Gone out of date.
Yeah, they run out of date or, the cost of actually holding on to... you know, these things are just killing your supply chain. You know, so you need to understand the business and marketing's then role within the context of the wider business and the environment. And, you know, so theory is brilliant. Like, and we're exposed to some really, really good work now. I think it was missing for years. Like, you know, it was just generally a gap and, it shouldn't have been such a revelation, but it was. And like, there's good evidence there now, but it's theory and you can't live it. You have to go off and do your own work because the answer is always going to be contextual to kind of your business, your market, your geography, you know, everything, even like, you know, just everything kind of would have an impact on it, you know. So unless you're looking at it from your own place in the world, that theory won't serve you because it's built generally, you know, and obviously it's there as stimulus or guidance, but it's not your silver bullet, you know?
Yeah. So it depends.
It depends.
Is probably the answer.
Yeah. Which is, you know, over time, if you have a strategy, it tends not to be for 12 months. And going back to your point, doing more than one, and knowing when to do it. So timing is obviously very important. That's what you need to talk to people about. We're going to do this now to achieve this. We're going to do this now because of X, you know. And I think that's the way to do it. But if people are going in to say, look, we need to build our brand because over time it drives more profitable returns. It's like, we haven't got the cash flow. We have to pay dividends next month, you know. Like, so Yeah,
but there's also, I think, like an understanding, like what people mean by build our brand as well. Like, yeah, that's a really important conversation to have. Like, well, what do you mean by that? Because the brand shows up in every single, like a AdWords, like your brand is there. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it actually shows up in everything you do. And like, just kind of that point of like, I think the things and all that. I'd worked on a thing previously, which were like, what were the, almost the stage gates to the next level of investment and the next thing you would do for new market entries that I was working on. Because again, like that, with all the money in the world, you'd go to stage four, but like we didn't. So you have to go, what are the basics? What's the foundational stuff we need to do? And then what would signals be that indicate those basics are actually giving us traction and that would allow us unlock the next level of investment? And just trying to even critically think about that, the right stage gates for your business, and they'd be different for every business.
Yeah, they would be. And also, look, it would come down to understanding the marketplace, ultimately the consumers, and what demand is there, you know, to sell into. So, like, it's difficult kind of to just talk about, you know, what the consumer understanding, yeah, because you won't have, just looking at the time. I know Joe Rogan runs his podcast now. They're longer than Oppenheimer. But I don't think you want to listen to me too much longer. But it does, like, I think it does come back to, you know.
I'm still on page one of my questions, though.
So you have to, but you do have to understand, like, you know, it built a lot around what level of attention and what resources you put towards understanding and staying up to date with your customers, you know. And that's, you know, it's obviously a critical thread that you would take through both kind of business cycles, business plan, commercial planning, but also obviously then your marketing, because it's not a cliche really, is it? You're responsible for growth, but you're also responsible to be the voice of the consumer in the business.
Yes, which a lot of us still aren't. Responsible for growth, talking about consumers, I want to get into kind of the ideas of loyalty and penetration and kind of your views on that and how that works. Because look, you know, there's obviously been discussion and stuff written about loyalty being, you know, there's no such thing as loyalty. Right. And so where's your take on loyalty and penetration as kind of the growth drivers?
I think the general science kind of has been consistently proven that over time, penetration is a bigger growth driver in business than loyalty, you know, and there's a myth busted around the Pareto principle, you know, that like holding on to kind of 20% of customers actually, you know, looks after 80% of sales. We all know now that, you know, what's it? Our customers are competitors' customers. And also that, you know, heavy customers become lighter customers over time and some lighter customers become heavier over time. So like, you know, things change because guess what? It's a marketplace, you know. So it's a marketplace, you know. So we have all the general kind of science there. But again, it comes back to your own context within that, you know, like smaller businesses or, you know, market entries. Well, they won't sell more and they won't sell as often as, you know, the established business in the marketplace. So, you know, if they have, you know, if you're B2B and you have one customer that is actually 60% of your sales, well, like you fold unless you look after them. So it's completely contextual, you know, like, so it's again, it's some really good guidance, but it's not necessarily a silver bullet, you know, like, so kind of look, if our business is looking like this, then generally we can say, yeah, we're doing more of the right thing. And, you know, we're maybe at a tipping point of becoming a big business or a bigger brand and have maybe a longer term recipe for success. But we just got to get there, you know?
Yeah. We're just going to call this the It Depends.
Yeah, the all It Depends section. Do your own work. Read the books, also, you know, use them. Look, but that's what we're meant to do, you know?
But I was going to say that actually that's it. Like, do you know what I mean? Have the information, know it. Listening to things like this and going, actually, okay, there's things I can think about, but how does that apply to my business? And like, one of the things you posted earlier in the year about, you know, going into 2024, I need to read it. Marketers must prioritize market share in their plans for the coming year. Slowing market growth on a smaller customer base should mean more marketers are prioritizing market share. So where are you thinking that marketers need to look for increasing market share? How are they going to maintain it?
So, it's just a, it's the reason it's such a, an important metric, but it always is that it's, it basically is a kind of a relative benchmark, how well you're doing against the rest of your industry. You know, like, so if your marketing and if the policies are, you know, the, if what you're doing kind of is holding your position or winning your position in a marketplace, well, that's kind of the best share, because, you know, you could be growing, but the marketplace would grow faster. You know, you could be winning loads of leads, but they don't translate into sales. You know, like, you could have really high visibility, but, you know, it doesn't result in, you know, a conversion. Like, all these things, you're getting parts of things right, but you're not getting everything right, you know, particularly in the customer's eyes. And, so you'll have loads of internal, maybe, benchmarks that you could use to say we're successful. Well, market share is an external one. And particularly, as say, if you look at things now, economies are slowing down. Some of the numbers look, you know, good, but there's been high levels of government spending that are driving that, rather than the private sector, or like job layoffs as well. So things are slowing down. Definitely inflation is slowing, but inflation has to slow, because otherwise, we just see prices go up 20% every year. Like, so prices are still relatively high. Economies are kind of squeezed in the middle. So, you know, that's, that can lead to some stagnation as well, and obviously that will impact how often people will buy or what they'll buy. So as economies are squeezed, companies have already kind of jacked up their prices. They can't really put them up anymore, so inflation is kind of tapering up. So with all that, if you know that your marketing kind of policies or your marketing execution is working to maintain or grow share in a tighter environment, then you're doing a good job. And if you're losing, somebody else is doing a better job than you are, you know. So market share becomes, I suppose, a very strong kind of performance indicator for that.
Yeah. What are the things people listening today could do to kind of start thinking about how they maintain that? I know in your post you talked about, like, you know, brand power, share of voice. Like, are they, like, do you think they're the fundamentals to be getting right to make sure you're maintaining the market share?
Yeah, like, there's, you know, I won't bang on about evidence only being a guide all the time. Like, there's some good prescription there too. And, like, you know, share of voice or excess share of voice is one area to that helps grow kind of share of market. Your pricing strategies obviously have big impact in terms of your share of market, but also the profitability of that share. There is probably the best time to start investing in your brand was yesterday, you know. Not today, but if you haven't, start today. That's what they, you know, it's, yeah, it sounds like a cliche, yeah, yeah, but the resilience that brands have shown through quite kind of, you know, rapidly changing marketplaces. Like, brands have been able to put their price up by around, you know, 15-20%, and people still bought them, you know. Like, so they are, yeah, you see some drop off of sales, but like, for a 20% increase, you're seeing kind of really moderate single digit kind of drop off in sales so far. So, you know, brands are kind of, they're paying back in a big way. Obviously one of the things that I posted recently as well, like, is, you know, brand power is kind of almost where people don't think about you. You're so subconsciously the choice that they don't consciously think of you at all. And the brands with the biggest power, they're not thought of, but they sell more, and they sell more often, you know.
Yeah, tend to be the biggest.
Yeah, yeah, well, and they become, you know, the biggest, or they are maybe the most premium, you know. That, like, when is that ever going to be a bad idea? That's, you know, like, so, you know, you should start to kind of develop, but it's a hard work. It's a long term to pay off. But if you do look at it, you're like, you kind of look back and say, how many people got into business to kind of chuck around spreadsheets, kind of go back to your earlier point. Nobody did. You know, there's a reason why, like, an entrepreneur or somebody chose to set up in a marketplace, whether they, or, you know, maybe they pivoted from what they were at the beginning into something else for good reason, you know. So that reason alone, like, it, there's, you know, there's an element of brand to that. Like, you know, if you go back to the history of, you know, why companies set up, how they first started marketing themselves, what they said. So, like, history is a kind of very good place to get your stimulus for, you know, for building a brand and who you are, why you do what you do, and why people should buy you versus somebody else. And, you know, every business should really have that understanding, whether, you know, they choose to kind of exercise that externally through branding, but, like, they should certainly know why they're in business internally.
We're at time, we're way over, but I wanted to ask you two final questions. One, just going back to the global role at PokerStars, and you kind of touched on kind of the balance of global and local, and that's something I've experienced, and kind of it's a challenging thing to navigate, because there's the efficiency of scale of doing things globally, right? There just is, but then there's the understanding of local nuance and being able to listen to that and hear and understand what's true versus what's felt. Do you know what I mean? Like, we think. So how did you navigate that in your global role at PokerStars? Or did you just kind of ignore it?
No. Look, we did proper commercial and marketing planning. So we knew what type of, we kind of segmented by markets. And we also then looked at the different types of customers in each of those markets and explored, like, okay, where is the headroom? Where can we, you know, where can we win? Where can we increase extraction rates? You know, like, so we did a lot of research to understand that, you know, but at a general level, I would say, look, you know, a brand is a brand. Usually it should have some class of universal appeal, you know, so it should be able, it gives you a license to travel, you know, so as much as you can, do it globally, and then you adapt, you know, what you need to, locally. You'll need to do some adaptations anyway because of regulations and, you know, different kind of, people's, behavior. But like I said earlier, like when we did the research, there's kind of like three, in a hierarchy of messaging, there's kind of three messages that were the most important.
Universally.
Yeah, like they might not all have been 1, 2, and 3, you know, consistently, but they were the top three universally. Like, so people, like, you've kind of had guests on before talking about simplicity. Margaret, you know, from and, you know, that simplicity index is a great kind of barometer, you know. So most things people want are kind of, you know, simple, easy, or maybe even subconscious choices, you know, like the more effort it is, more work, and we don't have time for it. So, you know, for the most part, a global brand, you know, global marketing kind of should, at a branding level, at a campaign level is probably where the adaptation needs to, you know, start, because we've seen those bad examples of where, you know, ads are kind of retrofitted in, or they're written by 5 different markets and they kind of become so vanilla. They don't have any kind of center of gravity for, you know, any one of those individual markets. So, you know, there's where the adaptation takes place, but it depends. Like, it will depend on, like, arguably, you know, Coca-Cola could get away with having, you know, in between it be kind of tentpole campaigns, one global campaign for everyone. Cause it's like, it's the fizz, it's the can. It's a sizzle, you know, Cadbury, you know, seeing the chocolate go through the middle of the squares. Like, I know it's kind of like almost thinking stock image, be like, they're brand assets. They don't have to say much more because they have, like, so much equity. So, you know, they don't need any purpose bolted onto them or anything like that. So, like, those kind of unique characteristics, they just buy you so much license to, you know, not have to be over orchestrating things that you don't need to do either. You know?
Yeah. And being super local. Like, it's a balance. And, you know, I'm doing some work with people at the minute trying to help people navigate that. Like, how do you navigate from, you know, your home market where things work to actually figuring out, like, a lot of things we've talked about, like where to go next,
yeah.
what those insights, what's the market dynamics, what are the important things,
well, and then Vodafone do a great job kind of in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, their local sponsorships, their the local storytelling. But if I, obviously I don't need to go from Ireland, but like if you go to the UK and they tell story of somebody from the UK, it still, it looks natural, looks like a fit. You know, and maybe they sponsor something else over there. Nothing looks off strategy, if you know what I mean. Like,
because there's a strategy.
There's consistency. There's a strategy to it. And, you know, telling people stories is a great way of, you know, building local connections. You know, putting that local insight into a global insight. You know, so there's where the adaptation can come from. And obviously, look, there's other adaptations that are built into marketing because of, you know, a local market. It doesn't always have to be your communications, your pricing, like this, you know, the four P's that you need and you may need to adapt some more than others, you know, like, I think a Domino's pizza is probably $6 in New York and it's $25 right. here. So they've been able to adapt their, the car's the same, like, you know, you'd buy a Nissan for 18,000 in the US and, you know, 60 grand here as well. So I know everyone give out about taxes and stuff, tax differences. But, you know, there are differences, you know, in terms of where you can be successful with your marketing. It's not just communications that where the adaptation needs to be made.
Last one, we'll go back to the, kind of the start, and you talked about, you know, your experience in agency and that kind of the full service. Do you think we need to, like Rory Sutherland talked about this, that the biggest mistake that we made in marketing was splitting everything up and not being full service? Do you think there's a case to go back?
I think the something I'm looking at the moment, the agencies are starting to, like the agency groups are all publishing their end of year results. Publicis, I think it was yesterday. And what they're talking about is, I think these, like you see WPP folding up their brands. A lot of the agencies, organize themselves around data. And I think what you'll start to see is this kind of structural model, which basically kind of, because creative agencies even globally are really struggling, you know? I think in terms of, rebuilding kind of the profitability, you're going to start to see kind of more client led teams from agency groups, or this kind of structural model where, you know, between data research and, you know, combined client management, you know, insight, they'll kind of say you'll nearly need to be able to pick the best of us. And they'll, like Omnicom Group bought, I can't remember who they bought an e-commerce business, but essentially, it's a flywheel. Anyway, they have an end-to-end solution now that kind of takes them right into, you know, right from kind of your creative, your consumer piece all the way through to development, media, and also then straight into your e-commerce buying. So they have like an end-to-end solution. So I think what they'll try and do, or what they migrate to, is back to a kind of full service. And like in this very, what's 80%, by the way, of in-house teams work with agencies.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So like what, you know, like when are like, you know, there's a benefit to kind of having an end-to-end solution, because what you don't want to be is busy all the time as a marketer, talking to, like having 20
to
different meetings.
The agencies.
Yeah. And they don't want it either, you know, like, I think there's some cleanness to that as well. And, you know, hopefully that will also lead to, I think, more legacy, appointments of agencies. So like there might still be reviews, but like that brands and agencies work together, you know, because you see kind of, the famous campaigns, you know, a famous brand kind of built over time, been built across, you know, a longer tenure of marketing team, but also longer relationships with their, you know, their partners in building that too.
Yeah. And that's really important.
Yeah.
Listen, thanks so much for the time. I know, as I said, you've moved on from PokerStars and something new will come next. And maybe when you've had time to settle into that, you'll come back, tell us about it, how it's going, and we can catch up again.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want me back, but seriously, and I apologize again. I drone on. I know when I hear this
it depends.
Yeah, it depends. No, but I do know when I hear this back, it was like, who was that speaking? Because, I don't know, certain kind of Walter Mitty kind of character thinks of some voice that will carry. I'm sure your listeners will disagree.
No, listen, really appreciate it. Thanks a million. And yeah, we'll catch up again.
Oh, great. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, Ian. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of That's What I Call Marketing. And, you know, for me, coming out of this episode, the importance of being informed and knowing that your marketing is contextual really is important. And from that, the two most important words of marketing, it depends. I really believe they're very important words for us in marketing. We need to understand all of the marketing history, evidence, beliefs that are out there, do our reading, do our research, and then understand the context that we are operating in. Because the context of your business is very different to the context of someone else's. So then take all the best that you know and apply it, because it depends on all of that context. Well, best of luck to Ian in his new role in Dentsu. And that is it for today's episode. Again, please do rate or review this episode if you enjoy it. We do love the 5 stars. But look, it really does help us reach a new community of amazing marketers just like you. So please help us spread the word. And of course, do subscribe wherever you're listening or watching so you never miss an episode again. And we are across LinkedIn, X, Instagram, and TikTok. So if you want some shorter clips and other marketing news and thoughts, follow us where you are on social. Just look for That's What I Call Marketing. And of course, if you want to catch up on our previous episodes with the likes of Karen Nelson Field, Mark Sands, Michael Corcoran, and 60 other guests that we've had over the last 2 years, go to thatswhatiCallMarketing.com and you'll find all of our previous episodes. So for me, Connor Byrne, until the next episode, thanks for joining me.
Thanks to The Indie List for sponsoring today's show. Visit theindielist.ie to find out more.
If you would like to reach an engaged community.